Suppose that someone known to us happens to spend a night in one of these notable bedrooms, being unaware of its fame. Surely that person might dream about or have contact with the Queen, and if sensitive or mediumistic, our friend might even receive messages from Elizabeth by, say, automatic writing, and go away elated by the honor de distinction. The message would be inanimate, of course, poor stuff, just as shades, thought, forces or astralities are inanimate. These things happen, they exist, they cannot be denied. Every ancient battlefield, or place of some former crime or tragedy carries the feeling of its stain of crime or sadness for centuries to come, so that sensitive people register and shrink from it. In such a world as this, with these strange happenings about us, spiritualism has grown. Now for another example, many spiritualist services are held, we may say, in some public building, or in an ex-Baptist chapel or mission hall. For owing to lack of means, very few spiritualist churches acquire their own premises. The hall will probably bear signs of having been hastily cleared after a whist drive or dance held on the previous evening. No atmosphere of religion has been built up, and cannot be in a building which houses such diverse activities. This condition is typical of the average spiritualist meeting. Contrary to expectation, the people attending seem normal middle-class folk. As they settle down in their seats, they bring an air of expectation, even of excitement. This is because the medium or exponent tonight is no other than Mrs. X, famed in the movement for her gifts. While they wait, members of the audience are either reading psychic journals they have purchased at the door, or whispering among themselves. At length the chairman introduces Mrs. X, a person who looks kind, sincere and in no way remarkable or weird. After a prayer and a hymn sung with hearty emphasis rather than any display of musical talent, comes what all have been waiting for. Mrs. X is to give a demonstration of psychometry, that is, of reading the aura of articles sent up by members of the audience. Those articles are even now being collected on a tray, and presently they go up to a table beside Mrs. X. All these articles have been worn by their owners, and consist of oddments of jewelry, pens, pencils, keys, pocket books, watches, necklaces and rings in great variety. Mrs. X bends over the tray. Everyone holds their breath. Mrs. X selects an article, and handling it continually, as though drawing forth her knowledge out of that article, begins her reading. She is astonishingly accurate. The first article is one which might be worn either by a man or a woman. Mrs. X makes no mistake. A description of the owner is given, of the owner's character, and of his state of health and happiness. The owner's Christian name and the Christian names of some of his relatives and friends who have passed on, all these are given out, but none come easily. There is a feeling that a great effort of concentration goes into each reading, no mere knitting of the brows or head, concentration, but concentration of the woman's whole being, of all her vital forces. Readings follow in rapid succession, nearly all being accepted, and some, giving notably detailed and accurate facts recognized with some excitement. Now the meeting is drawing to a close. Mrs. X looks played out. Another hymn is sung, and a brief prayer of benediction follows. Afterwards the audience foregather, animatedly talking things over. The weary Mrs. X is hemmed in by people who want just another private little message for themselves, and is at length rescued by the chairman. Anyone attending that meeting for the first time would be puzzled by Mrs. X's accuracy, which was far beyond the utmost range of chance or coincidence, more puzzled still because she so often seemed to bring out happenings which had long been forgotten by the person receiving the reading, happenings which had to be recalled from deep recesses of memory, puzzled again because the audience so readily believed that everything was done by spirit people working through Mrs. X, who had only just to put across their messages to someone in the audience. Could it be that everything was as simple as that? If so, why did Mrs. X get so exhausted? Far from being powerfully helped, it looked as if she was contending with great difficulties. A stranger might not have been so puzzled had Mrs. X been out of form, Or if some lesser demonstrator had only got half or a quarter of the readings recognized. But this was a wonderful demonstration which did not seem in the least like mind, reading, and thought. Transference was far too facile an explanation to be entertained. An inquirer, let it be assumed, would be sufficiently interested to pay a second visit on the following week. By good fortune, Mrs. X is again the demonstrator, this time of public clairvoyance instead of psychometry. No articles are required. The demonstrator stands on the platform and speaks direct to persons she selects among the audience, this time mostly describing spirit people who, she claims, are with the persons whom she addresses. Again, she is very accurate, most of her descriptions being readily recognized, and one or two refused at first are later accepted by persons who at last recall the identity of the spirit while on earth. Again, there seems no likelihood of thought, transference being the explanation, because recognition of some of the spirits had to be laboriously extracted from the person concerned. This is a demonstration of the extraordinary frailty or fallibility of the human memory, if of nothing else, and the whole performance is at least as puzzling as was that of the previous week. For the convinced spiritualist, the explanation which had sufficed last week sufficed again. The spirits were doing everything. Mrs. X had only to stand there and be used by them. Noting the effort put forward by Mrs. X, it is not easy to accept so facile an explanation. But certainly both meetings had been a wonderful demonstration of something. But of what? They were not comparable, for instance, with the displays of thought or mind reading seen on public platforms or on television. They were not so slick. For one thing, mind reading or telepathy, were not due to some pre-arranged system, differs widely in that it deals only with things which are foremost in people's minds. As when a blindfolded lady on the stage describes with complete accuracy articles held by her assistant which he has just taken from a member of the audience. With Mrs. X, however, it was often the things hindmost in people's minds. She would describe happenings, or people who had died long ago, rather than more recent migrants to spirit life. This again requires consideration. It is worth taking all possible pains to solve this problem. It has been argued in these pages that if spiritualism is true and can truly demonstrate that men survive death, then no event of comparable importance has happened for at least 2,000 years. These two demonstrations by Mrs. X, we have to realize, are typical of what is happening all over the country in spiritualist churches and halls, where demonstrations of public clairvoyance are the means most frequently employed to carry conviction to the general public. Not every demonstrator is up to the standard of Mrs. X, far from it. Otherwise, our description has tried to be typical of all the others. Chin's sort of demonstration has convinced the spiritualists. Has it convinced our inquirer? Yes, that this had been a display of a human faculty previously unknown to him. Does it prove human survival? No. Many people feel there must be some alternative explanation. They cannot believe that the souls of men and women who have passed onward to something far more beautiful than our world can return, however much they may desire it, to conditions as crude as those which prevailed at the two meetings. This is no fault of Mrs. X's, who did her part valiantly. But intuitively, some people will feel that for a real spiritual manifestation there should be beauty and harmony in the hall, and devotion on the part of the worshippers. These were mostly lacking. Where then shall we seek an explanation of these phenomena? Here the Arthur Conan Doyle message can help. He speaks of astral memories. Where are they? What are they? They often remain embedded in the aura, the human aura being an extension of man's etheric body, a body which permeates his physical body. It is the etheric body which has the true sense of feeling. Drive it out by a blow on the head or by an anesthetic, and the physical body feels nothing. The aura is an emanation extending beyond the physical body for some inches. Being a semi-material complement to the physical body, it must register and retain a memory of all that has happened to that body, a memory of the people it has met and loved or hated, of the happenings which have pleased or saddened it. All these are stamped on the etheric body and aura. Thus each man bears around with him a complete record of all that has happened to himself. Now, this aura by its nature permeates physical matter, impregnating it with itself. Therefore an article worn by anyone becomes saturated by the wearer's aura, and can be sensed or read by a sensitive such as Mrs. X. Here we have the explanation for the evening of psychometry. When the aura of Mrs. X read or extracted information from the aura of the article handled, she was enabled to link up instantaneously with the aura of its owner, and thereby extract additional information. This was done by an immense effort of concentration on the part of Mrs. X. So also with the demonstration of public clairvoyance. Here Mrs. X, again by a mighty effort of concentration, was so able to extend her own aura, for auras are capable of such an extension, that she could reach and draw out from the person selected the information required, Mrs. X wholeheartedly believing, as did others present, that all was being done by the spirits. Are the spiritualists all wrong, and are we completely right in our supposition? Let us not be too sure. It is said that you can fool all the people for some of the time and some of the people all the time, but not all the people all the time. Why do the spiritualists so wholeheartedly believe in their spirit land and people? Because they have sound reasons which were not, however, very apparent in the two meetings described. One cannot lay down hard and fast rules about these subtle matters, or declare that these spiritualistic phenomena consist of mere auric readings or husks, with never a real spiritual contact. It is possible, even likely, the more material the people and their outlook, the less reverent the service and the conditions of the building which houses it, the more probably will our explanations fit. For these are the sort of things which can be pricked like bubbles and fall away. Still our explanation is insufficient. Something remains. The something which not only remains but prevails is human love. If there be pure, selfless love, strong and vibrant in the heart of any one of those present in the audience, the power of that love might reach out and call a loving presence or message back from the spirit realms. Such a contact is possible. Then, instead of a dreary recital of astralities or auralities, to coin a word, something real, poignant and sometimes intensely moving happens, such as the startling overshadowing of the medium by the actual spirit who is trying to communicate, so that his identity is proved beyond all shadow of doubt, not by anything he says but by the manifestation of his inmost spirit, his personality, mannerisms and characteristics through the medium. This, then, is the strength of spiritualism. Part 2, The Message of Arthur Conan Doyle. Foreword to Part 2. Little has yet been said which can give any real idea of the conditions ruling when Arthur Conan Doyle spoke at the later series of meetings when he gave the full import of his message. That which follows is an eye-witness account taken, slightly abbreviated, from Your Kingdom Come. It first describes the little up-room furnished as a chapel in which the meetings were held, the great power which gathered there, and the spiritual upliftment of all present as White Eagle opened the meetings with prayers of deep sincerity which filled the listeners with the wonder and awe of God. It was strange to see the day personality of Minister sink into abeyance when White Eagle came. After the prayer followed a change. White Eagle had gone and the medium became absolutely still. The presence of another personality gradually became evident. For I saw the medium's form settle in the chair, the hands fall loosely, as in the characteristic attitude of someone else. Occasionally a hand would lift to stroke and meditatively smooth an upper lip, as if a heavy moustache hung there. Then again the figure settled. The face was now changed, almost remolded, so far as a person's face is capable of change. The face now actually became, it was witnessed, like the face of Arthur Conan Doyle. The voice now held a northern burr, whereas Minister's voice is clear, her words clipped. Now the voice sometimes slurred its words. Slowly fell the words at first, each sentence building up upon another. The glow of the lamp fell on the wall beyond, lighting an engraving of the master which hung there. Wonderful indeed was the sense of the power of the spirit within those walls. The voice continued, now swept along as by a torrent, now silenced as if by the glory of some vision that it was about to try to form into words, now, stroke by stroke, like a smith at an anvil, beating out thought into expression in words. Then after a period came a check, heralding always a change of subject, a pause while the mind behind switched over to a new theme. Then again came the steady torrent of words. Or perhaps there would come a mistake, the beginning of a sentence to which the mind behind could not see a logical ending. Then came a crisp stop, score that out. The voice would then retrace and recommence the particular message. Yet all this time, one side of my mind was noting how strangely formal, even businesslike the gathering was. Apart from a few words of greeting, it was obvious that the speaker was continuing a theme from where it had ended a week or more ago, and that every atom of power, every moment of time must be utilized to the full. So also, when the meeting drew to a close and all the power was spent, the speaker would conclude with just a word of thanks, a message of affection or a blessing, and a brief farewell. I shall long remember, indeed, I shall never forget, the passionate earnestness of the speaker, his purposeful voice, his forceful gesture as he attempted to emphasize some meaning not wholly clear in words. This was in truth a wonderful experience. The period of reception for these final messages was about 7 months, ending on June 1, 1932, which was almost 2 years since the first contact had been made with Arthur Conan Doyle. After his passing, the account which we have just quoted will, it is hoped, serve to set the scene for the reader, so that from now on, throughout this second part of the book, the messages can be given without further comment or interruption. For the convenience of the reader, the brief words of greeting and farewell with which Arthur Conan Doyle began and ended his discourses have been omitted, and the discourses themselves arranged in ordered sequence. Only some of the prayers with which White Eagle opened the meetings, before Arthur Conan Doyle took over the control, have been placed at the head of the chapters, but, to distinguish them, in italic type. Apart from these, all that follows in this part proceeds from Arthur Conan Doyle himself. It is he alone who now speaks. Action of himself, and of a life ever more abundant fearlessness, singleness of soul, the will always to strive for wisdom, be the signs of him whose feet are set on that fair path which leads to heavenly birth, Krishna. We call upon the centers of love, wisdom and power, and we worship at the foot of the cross, the emblem of sacrifice and renunciation of all personal aims and desires. We seek to be at one with you, divine and living Christ, the great white light. We await your coming, O Spirit of love. We worship you, and through your love may the truth of life beyond death of the body dawn upon man, so that all fear of death be lifted from man, woman, and child. May they have clear vision of the progress and beauty which opens before them. Thus shall man come to know his brother and to love him, even as you hast loved all. So mote it be. I will find myself in an unspeakably beautiful heaven world. I desire above all things to be able to bring such a reality as this home to my friends, but I also realize only too well that it can be shared only if they can understand the nature of the heaven to which I have gone. All this has made me feel a deeper urge to spread the truth concerning the after life. I believe that during my earth life I have already won something of a reputation as a missionary. I carry on this work still for the people of earth, but by different ways and means from those which I used to follow. How difficult it is to make a true contact with the earth and its people. All is so different from what I once anticipated. A 95. True conception of the real life of the spirit has yet to dawn upon man. Thank God, the mists begin to thin, so that I can see with a clearer vision than once seemed possible. Can it be that my friends still expect me to talk with them about the trivialities of the personal earth life? I have now done with trivialities, having found the realities of man's being and existence. Yet, shall I ever find it possible to paint, With the language which I find at my disposal in the mind of mine Esther, any adequate picture of the glory, wonder and beauty of heaven? Yes, it can, it must be attempted, it must be done. Page 96. It is a fact that after passing through what are known as the astral places we shed a shell, the dress or envelope which once contained or housed the soul during its astral life. This shell or body remains in that astral condition from which we die to rise again to true spiritual life, and it can be reanimated or resurrected temporarily by psychic powers. Note, this is purely an artificial animation, but can appear to a medium as a reality, as a real spirit person. This is why we wish to raise people's minds to a truer appreciation of the life of the spirit, for in this alone can they make real contact with those who have passed on. Let us remember, however, that a large percentage of people living in the astral worlds have no desire whatever to return to Earth, being no longer interested either in its progress or the people they have left behind. That is why it is not for everyone to seek out or try to force communication between the so-called dead and the living. I repeat that in this new life of mine intercourse between the two worlds proves not nearly so simple as I had been led to think. Nevertheless, communion, holy communion, between soul and soul can be a more glorious reality than is yet understood. Indeed, psychic communications as they are accepted today must someday give place to this truer communion of spirit between incarnate and arisen souls. At present the personal aspect of communication is over, stressed, personal memories are mostly sought after, and if forthcoming are regarded as evidence of 97 identity and proof of an after life. Yet while these personal traits and mannerisms can endear a soul to its former friends on earth, it is well to remember that these may prove to be a pitfall, indicating that there exists too much surface relationship and insufficient recognition or understanding of the needs of man's spirit. Here, then, lies a basis from which much of the spiritualism of the future will evolve. It must change from that present free, and, easy, happy, go, lucky contact of the man of earth with the personal selves of those people who have passed on, thereby stimulating personal memories of earthly pleasures, desires and happenings, and grow into a deeper understanding between souls, and through that a deeper recognition of the spiritual needs of each soul. When such a reality of reunion becomes a part and parcel of the soul, life of the man still incarnate and of the man discarnate, then mortal man's fear of transient things such as sickness, poverty and death will be swept away. For this same spirit which will quicken in man is the very spirit of the living Christ, and can heal the ills of all people, for he shall wipe away all tears. With all the strength of my newly released spirit I desire to reveal to my new friends that new man which is Doyle. I am no longer concerned with the many trivialities of the old earth life, or of earthly affairs, except in so far as these affect the spiritual development of the person concerned, not, alas, that I can greatly help the individual save by telling him about the foundation of the spiritual life. Yes, yes, the old Doyle seems to be passing, but I will prove to you all that while I die yet I live again. Yes, but there are no trimmings left on a man when he has passed the second death. Only his purified spirit remains after that supreme experience. Oh, that second awakening! Then was I conscious of only one thing, of only one thing, and that was the wonder, the infinitude, the allness of God's love for me and for all men. In that supreme moment I knew that there could be no such thing as separate existence apart from God. For at that moment the personality which separates man from God had died, while 98 his individuality had been reborn. For then I saw before me a great pulsating throng of spiritual life and being, into which had passed all the souls of men who had lived in innocence and forgetfulness of self. As units of this mighty host of souls, those who have passed through an earth life, which is really an earth, death, quicken and live, giving forth from themselves with gladness and with joy all that will benefit God's mighty plan for men. Not for a moment do I wish to destroy the beliefs of spiritualism, not so, rather am I trying to bring back a larger, wiser and finer understanding of this glorious truth of survival and of communion with the beyond. But not with everyone there. Some men pass onwards weary in mind and spirit to a condition of dreaminess wherein they live for long periods, just breathing, as it were. Other souls speedily traverse the lower spheres, shed the dense astral body which is theirs on quitting the still denser physical body, and enter the heaven world. Realize that only in a state of consciousness such as this is the soul of man brought face to face with his judgment, on with God. When faced with this judgment, which is but a man's realization of himself as he truly is, he is able to look back once and for all into his own depths, aware at last of his own frailty. When set beside the radiance and glory of the godlike life, he is filled with compassion towards all men, and with that redeeming love of Christ which can also redeem his own soul. New ways open for him. He can go forward, onward, upward, leaving the earth plane behind forever, onward and upward into ever higher and more wondrous realms of spiritual consciousness and understanding, ever opening himself to the inflow of a life ever more abundant. Or he can be arrested by a bitter cry, by the anguish of those sorely struggling in shadow and sorrow on the earth. Is it for that soul to ignore this heart cry of humanity? Who shall say, "Rest in peace"? Yes, at last I understand those words. For had 99 you ever experienced the peace, the tranquility and the restful beauty of the heaven world, you would realize that there are many who would choose to rest in peace in such conditions. Does not man on earth also seek rest after strenuous labors? I find that I do not like the personal pronoun very much now. It has become we instead of I. And this is how every man will feel after his entry into that realm of spiritual life where there is no separation either from his fellows or from God. Although the individuality of a man can become greater here than you on earth can well conceive, in its greatness it becomes unified with the whole, with all creation, with all living creatures. Thereafter no person speaks of himself as I because he thinks in terms of we in place of I. Man will then know that he can neither think, speak nor act entirely of himself, because his every thought, word and act has an effect on the entire community. We. Did not the Master Jesus say, "Of myself I can do nothing"? Does not the truly great man say, "I am nothing"? Feeling himself nothing, he becomes a sharer with God in every thing. He becomes all, an infinite being in an infinite universe. Does this seem like undue humility? No. This is one of the first and most necessary lessons a man learns when he has passed the second death. Spiritualism has a vital message to bring, because some souls newly released from physical life need contact with those left behind when they first come over here. Then communication between the two states of life is right and true. The fault arises when there is clinging by earthly people to an arisen soul which should pass onward. To establish true communion, man must always seek for a pure spiritual contact, which is never obtainable through the cruder forms of psychic phenomena. Today, I believe, is my birthday on earth, and although most people would consider this long past and finished so far as I am concerned, yet the links of the earth seem to hold. The day of a spirit's incarnation in the flesh is always a day of power for that spirit, and can be used for either good or evil. Thus on the anniversary of a birth, a death, or of any happening which vitally affects a human soul, the psychic vibrations will recur at the scene of that experience. Seem now to be far removed from earth memories, that is, to a point. Experiences which were trivial have faded, and only those which deeply affected me remain. The memory of much that I wrote has also vanished, while other works of my pen and imagination I know will live on, sometimes to sadden, at others to inspire. Thank God that many a writing of mine dwells in my heart as a glowing memory of happiness. As I am speaking, or shall we rather say, pouring my spirit through this human channel which was so long prepared for this special task, I am caught up again in a ray of power and can express with increased vigor my experiences since my release. In very truth, a man does not fall into a honeypot when he passes from the earth to the spirit world. Of course, everything depends on his mental and spiritual quality at the time of his release. He who has lived a life which was grossly material, sensual and selfish will find himself in Queer Street.